Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Mick Monagle here with you for another 2 hours. The other thing, baseball related and Yankee related as well, is Roki Sasaki, the young Japanese star, starting pitcher, who's coming over here early and, you know, limiting his chance to make a ton of money in his contract if he only comes in, I think it's 2 years later, but he's coming in early. He wants to pitch against the best is the rumor. He wants to be here. And there's a report from the Athletics' Jim Bowden that the final two teams, or that the teams he is expected to sign with, are the Yankees and the Padres. And this would be for any team to sign him. This is a young pitcher who's not going to make a lot of money. There's a limited, you can only pay him from the international pool money. So, I mean, almost all teams are on equal footing. Obviously, in recent, you know, history, most players from Japan prefer the West Coast and have chosen the West Coast. And I think that was the perception from the jump, that it would be San Diego or obviously Los Angeles who signs everybody. So to both the Mets and the Yankees were a team that met with them, and both have, like, I know there was some reports from his agent, Wolf, earlier in the month, that, you know, he had some issue with the Japanese media about posting for Major League Baseball early. I think there was some issue there or whatever. And so there was a thought that maybe he would rather go to a small market team, that he's here pretty much just to develop. And he's listening to all teams and trying to see what teams would, you know, help him along the way, or what teams can put him in a best position to be the best player he can be. And he wanted to do that at the Major League level, you know, here. And so there was some media issues, I suppose, with him, or just he felt uncomfortable with the media. So there was some thought that he might not prefer a major market, which I don't know if that's true or not. Obviously, if the Dodgers and the Yankees are two of the perceived favorites, I would find that hard to believe, because those are the two biggest markets. And I don't know, you know, if he would view L.A., where he would be overshadowed by, you know, Ohtani and Yamamoto, and maybe having to, you know, two companions there who can help him with it, two other, you know, superstar Japanese players to, you know, help shoulder the load there, is something that would appeal to him. But I got to tell you, I think, and I've always thought, that the Yankees and or the Mets, but now if we're going to hear that the Yankees are one of the two final teams, I think the Yankees have a hell of a sales pitch. In particular, like, they have had success. Matsui was a superstar here. Obviously, Tanaka, who I believe played on the same team as him at one point over the last few years, had a great tenure here. Was a big time pitching, was a big time postseason pitching performer. Was great. Was the ace of the staff for a while. Like, Tanaka was a great free agent signing and had a great career here with the New York Yankees. And I think Matt Blake is as good a pitching coach as there is in Major League Baseball. I mean, I think he has done more. I mean, now the starting pitching, he's been beneficial, not nearly as much as he's been in the bullpen. What the Yankees have done for relievers, and specifically sinker slider relievers, has been remarkable. I mean, whether it's Clay Holmes or even Wandy Peralta, like a lot of guys have come here and completely excelled and gotten much better. Nobody wants to talk about it, but Matt Blake is one of the more important Yankees in the organization. And so if you're going to sell the idea of being happy here, if you're going to sell the idea of flourishing here as a Japanese star, if you're going to sell the idea of having a pitching lab, which has kind of become the new trend phrase for it, for a young pitcher to develop, I mean, they just had the rookie of the year in Luis Gil. I think this is a, you know, Clark Schmidt, a young pitcher having success at the major league level. Like, I think this is as good a spot as any. And if you want to talk about off seasons and whether or not Arise can play second base or like whatever it looks like now, if they get Roki Sasaki, they're going to have to do something with their 5-man rotation. They would definitely have more of an ability to pivot and trade. Like, think about the possibilities if the New York Yankees get this young stud 20-year-old starting pitcher. I mean, think of what they could move Luis Gil. Like, it opens them up for trading from starting pitching depth. They've already done it with Nestor Cortez, and they're already looking to do it with Stroman and eating some money. But, I mean, you could get into the younger pitchers here. You can, I mean, yeah, it's nice to dream, especially with the aging Gerrit Cole and, you know, maybe a 30-year-old Fried and a 32-year-old blanking on his name, left-handed starting pitcher who I don't trust in a big spot. 3:11 in the morning. I even forget Yankee starting pitchers' names. But like, if you're able to get a young 20-year-old starting pitcher in here, you could trade from depth and you can move Clark Schmidt. You can move Luis Gil. You can find a way to really go out there and get another big-time bat trading away from strength, or have an ultimate young rotation with those three guys in it. Go to maybe a 6-man rotation or something like that, but you could have a young, controllable starting rotation that features three guys as your, you know, fountain of youth here. Like, that changes the dynamic. For me, I think it opens up Luis Gil to be traded, and I think that's exactly what I would do. I like Luis Gil. I think he's got good stuff. You know, he's been hurt already. He hasn't pitched that many innings. I think you'd be selling high on a young, controllable rookie of the year, a starter that I don't know if he's always going to be that. And I think right now, to help this team, if you could figure out a way to, get a big time bat in here, or, you know, get another option here by trading away from that starting pitching, that would change the team. I think the Mets need him more because the starting pitching, I don't trust at all. And they're probably going to go to a 6-man rotation anyway. I think he would be a, you know, a perfect fit for the Mets, but the Yankees, I mean, that's just, their rotation right now is stacked. They have the best, in my opinion, maybe Seattle, but they have the best starting pitching in the American League for sure. And if you add Sasaki to it, you can trade from strength, trade some of that young pitching for big-time bats. You could, I mean, I wish it would happen before Kyle Tucker left, but I think that would bring a huge benefit to the New York Yankees. So right now, there are reports that they're one of the two final teams, them and the Padres. That would be a coup for Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees. That opens them up to a bunch of possible possibilities. And yes, Carlos Rodon was the starter that lost my mind for half a second. Maybe I wanted to forget him on purpose. But you've got Cole, who's obviously at the back end of his career, 34, 35 years old. Rodon, who hasn't been what you hoped he wanted to be, around 32. You've got 30-year-old Max Fried. And then you've got the two young pitchers in Luis Gil and Clark Schmidt. You add another young pitcher, you could possibly trade away from that strength. You can put him in the rotation. It makes you younger, it makes you stronger, it makes you more flexible. That would be it. Just, I mean, it would be, he's that kind of pitcher where it's a coup for anyone, but it opens up a lot of possibilities for the New York Yankees. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Matt in Morristown. What's up, Matt?
What's up, C-Mac? How are you?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. I'll get to, can I talk about the Giants real quick?
Sure, of course. Whatever you want to talk about.
Okay, I haven't.
It's 3:14, buddy. Four
hours. Okay, I'm a Philly fan, first of all. But I enjoy your show. I listen to various shows. I live in Jersey, whatever. But just want to chime in that I've been listening to your show the last couple of weeks since the Colts game. And, you know, as a Philly fan, I'm cool with whatever happened. But for your guys, like looking at y'all, I mean, I don't know how you lose that, how you win that game and then bring, I don't know what y'all are doing, man. I'm sorry, man, but well, I agree with all your points I've been listening to. But yeah, well,
how they beat the Colts.
You could have had the next Jaden Daniels lined up, you know? We fear Jaden Daniels as Philly fans. We don't fear what you guys are cooking up. That's all I wanted to really check.
Yeah, no, well, thank you. Thank you for, thank you for that trash talk. Thank you for stepping on, kicking us while we're down as you're getting ready to play the Green Bay Packers. Yeah, I get it. And yeah, you should fear Jaden Daniels. That's the Eagles and Jaden Daniels, Hurts and Jaden Daniels are the division for the foreseeable future. And yeah, the Giants cost themselves the first round pick. I don't know what, the first overall pick rather. I don't know what Sanders is going to be. I don't know what Ward is going to be. I personally like Ward better than Sanders. I have no idea. I don't know who's going to fall to them at three. I don't know what they're willing to trade up. I want the young quarterback. That's what I've always wanted. That's what I believe you should do. Anytime you don't have a quarterback and you have a top three pick, you should take a quarterback. That's just my fundamental belief. Now, we'll see if a quarterback worthy of a third pick is going to be there. I would move up if I could. If they believe in Ward or Sanders, I move up. I don't care. I don't believe it's up to them. Now, Joe Shane did say he wasn't going to pull any Hail Marys or, you know, reach for any player or do anything out of self-preservation. I don't think moving up from 3-2 or 3-1 to get a quarterback when you don't have one. I mean, that's what NFL teams do year in and year out. That's what first-year GMs do, first-year rebuild teams do. That doesn't strike me as some sort of, you know, Hail Mary. If they've been to Colorado so many freaking times. They were at the Pop-Tart Bowl to watch Cam Ward play. Now, I know that's when they thought they had the first pick, and so that's clearly where you go when you don't have to trade for it. But still, if they fell in love with either of these two guys, if they believe in either of these two guys, you have to see what you can do to go get them. Plain and simple. Now, if they go 1-2 and you're stuck there to take Hunter, that's probably what the Giants should do. I don't know if there's a third quarterback. If they have faith in a third quarterback, you could probably get him later in the draft. I would do everything I could to make sure I got a quarterback, though, because if you don't have one, you need one. Plain and simple. And that's what's so frustrating about that game. I don't want to keep talking about that Colts game because it makes me sound like I don't want to continue to do that. But yes, I am still hung up on the idea they won that freaking game. It still drives me absolutely crazy. It does. And then how they handled the Eagle game drives me absolutely crazy because they should have handled that game like they should have handled the Colt game like they handled the Eagle game. I'm sorry. Now, they still might have won playing that way. That's how bad the Colts were that day. And I get that you don't try to lose. I understand that. You don't play to lose. I get it. But man, oh man, even if, you know, the Giants, that first pick, not having that first pick and not having for sure Sanders or Cam Ward or either one, your pick, it's going to drive me crazy. And if either of them be, and we all talk like we know, that's what's so obnoxious about all this. I'm sorry. All right. I know that there's going to be pundits who get paid to do it, right? So I'm not going to get mad at them. But like we all talk like we know these guys aren't going to be good. Like we know it. It's so silly. We have no idea. The guys, they could be great. They could be terrible. We all thought Sam Darnold was going to be great. Like people thought that Lamar Jackson wasn't suited to play the position. Now, he's going to have to transform into a running back or a wide receiver. Like He can't be quarterback. He's a two-time MVP. And he could very well win it for a third time. Like, we don't know. And I wanted the opportunity for the Giants to have that decision if they believed in the quarterback. And still at three, I'm looking to take the quarterback. And we'll see if there's options. There's some rumors. I don't know how true they are because I believe he said he's coming back to Penn State. But there's some thought that Aller, if he thinks he's a top three pick, would be willing to enter the draft now. I mean, I don't know how much scouting the Giants did on him. I'm sure they did their fair share. If they believe he's a top round, if they believe he's a quarterback worth taking, and they get that word to him and he enters the draft, I don't care. I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And I am not going to sit here and tell you I've watched enough of Sanders or I know. Because even if I watched more of Sanders, and I watched a fair amount of him, I watched a fair amount of Cam Ward. I'm not the biggest college football guy, I totally admit it. It's tough. It's tough with a family. I can't tell my wife and kids, Sunday is sorry, I'm in front of the TV for 8 hours. And then Saturday, the same thing. I just can't. I can't do it. So I watch what I can of college football. And once I realized it was going to be what it was going to be, I tried to focus on the two top quarterback prospects. But I don't know. I prefer Ward. I feel like he's got more high-end tools than Sanders does. And watching that Pop-Tart Bowl the first half, he was pinpoint accurate. I thought he played a great first half before coming out of the game. So, but I'm no expert. But I wanted Brian Daboll and Joe Shane to have that opportunity. And still, I want to move up and take the quarterback. That's what I want to do. If they believe in it, that's what I want to do. And I don't believe that is some sort of Hail Mary, self-preservation type move. That's a normal, I'm a terrible franchise without a quarterback move. That's what you do. So, yeah. 2 years ago, by winning some stupid games that honestly no one can even tell me a play from. You don't even remember those games. Beating New England, beating Philadelphia at the end of the year, beating Green Bay. I guess that's the most memorable one, beating Green Bay in prime time with Tommy DeVito. But, like, who cares? Could have had Jaden Daniels. Hey, and the biggest knock for me on Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, honestly, is that they passed on Bo Nix and Michael Penix, who look like players. Certainly Bo Nix does. He's just led his team to the playoffs. He led the Denver Broncos to the playoffs. Malik Nabers is great. He's a great player. I think he's going to have a hell of a career. Hopefully it's his entire career with the Giants. I think he's the next great young wide receiver in the sport. I'd rather have the quarterback. Rather have Bo Nix right now. Because Bo Nix played terrible to start the year, played well after that, and a well-played quarterback position gets you inside the playoffs. A dynamic, you know, record-breaking in reception wide receiver gets you 3 wins. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come back. Tony, I see you on the phones. We'll come back. We'll get back into the football conversation. You still want to have the baseball conversation. We'll talk about my pick, how I opened the show, what I think the Jets should do with the quarterback position, the head coaching position. And I want to stabilize this team. I'm not looking for the slam dunk hire. I'm not looking for the young guy who's going to take over for the next 10 years. I'm not looking for that new franchise quarterback coach. I'm looking for the guy who's going to come in here and win with this roster, stabilize this team. 888-808-1019 and do it with Aaron Rodgers. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Got you till 5 o'clock. We'll be right back. All right, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. The other piece of Met news is that they're involved, or at least talking to Verdugo. The Mets are just determined to get every player that ever played for the Yankees. It's unbelievable. And coaches, too. Like, it's all going to Verdugo. I was wondering if we were going to hear Verdugo's name at all this offseason. I haven't heard a damn thing about Verdugo until I saw a story the Mets are talking to him. Go ahead, pick up Verdugo. One of the more disappointing, and not that I expected much out of Verdugo as a Yankee fan. I thought he would be, you know, a gamer. I thought he would be someone they kind of needed, a left-handed bat who could put the ball in play, kind of an attitude, a little bit of a swag. And early on, we saw parts of it. I mean, but he was just awful. He was just awful. They're going to be better defensively. They're going to be better, obviously, offensively with Bellinger out and left. And I think it's going to be Bellinger in left and Dominguez in center. But still, Verdugo. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, to be a fourth outfielder. You got Marte, you got Siri, you got obviously Soto. I would think. I mean, I guess that's where Verdugo has fallen to kind of be a fourth outfielder, spot starter, you know, rotation piece. He was just awful last year. But again, the amount of Yankees that you guys are picking up our scraps, and who knows, maybe Verdugo will play a different position. You guys see him as a catcher. He'll be the backup catcher or something. I don't know. Yeah, your backup catcher's a former Yankee too. 888-808-1019. Tony in Montreal. What's up, Tony?
How you doing, C-Mac?
What's up, brother? How are you?
Good. How you doing, man? I'm happy to listen to you guys, and it's amazing you guys are on 24 hours a day. It's a killer up here in Canada. You can only get reasonable sports like regular time, and then at nighttime you're dying. That's
why. Well, I'm glad you're able to turn on the app and listen to me.
I love you guys, man. I'm unbelievable radio station, an unbelievable fan base. Listen, I love the Jets. Okay, I've been a Jets fan since the greatest of them all, Joe Namath. Okay, so I wear green and white. I'm not really big on the Giants, excuse me, but I'm just going to say this. Approximately 56 years now, the Jets have had a losing defensive record. The only time they've ever had a winning record is under Romeo Crennel, which was about 60%, 1997-99. You had Danny Murson, it was about 50.9% of wins. That's back in 2004-2006. And then you had Kerry Loughlin, 2009, he was at 56%. And then you had Mark Kramer, Mark Carrier was at 211, 210, 210, 211, he was 59%. Everybody else is under 30% to 40% to somewhere under 50%. And if we don't get a defensive coach, whatever you want to call it, that's in the brain trust, we cannot win. And I agree with you, stability is important. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers is that terrible. He's not the best, obviously. I don't like him personally. His as they say in French, gabarit, which is his personality, his aura. Not very likable guy. And you guys have mentioned him multiple times, but he did throw, 500 touchdown passes, and he's in an elite club. The bottom line for me is that if you don't play defense, bro, if you don't have defense, you lose.
Are you talking about like individual wins, like at the point of attack? Like what do you mean by percentage of wins from the?
I mean that the percentage what I'm looking at was that it's like a losing season. Like you're always below the mark, below the winning mark, and you're always in a situation where defense is giving up more points than any offense could create. So that's why I mentioned, and I was talking to yesterday, I would love to see a guy like Allen come in from the Lions, and take over, because he's a defensive-minded coach. And if you remember back when the Chicago team was a kick A team, that team had a defensive-minded head coach, and he was always in conflict with Ditka. But the Bears won because they had
Buddy Ryan. Defense. Talking about the 85 Bears, yeah, they won because of defense. The 2000 Ravens won because of defense, yes. A couple of them did, sure. The Steel Curtain, the first two Super Bowls, certainly won because of defense. But I disagree with you on needing a defensive-minded head coach because if I can get an offensive-minded head coach, if that's what I'm looking for. Like I'm looking for more, like I know, you know, I just consider Pete Carroll a head coach. And I'm looking for a stabilizing force. I want to bring back Aaron Rodgers. I talked about it in my open. I want to bring back Aaron Rodgers. I want to run this thing back. I believe this team is talented enough to win. Maybe not at the levels I thought. Maybe not an AFC championship game or get to a Super Bowl. But I think they can win 10 games and get to the playoffs and end this streak and stop being the worst franchise in professional sports. And so if I'm going to do that, one, I got to bring back Aaron Rodgers. I don't see a better way to do that next year. I don't see a better way for the New York Jets to be a decent to good football team next year other than Aaron Rodgers being the quarterback. He threw 28 touchdown passes, 11 interceptions, and 3,900 yards. Like, who are you bringing in to do better than that? And then tell me, assuming Aaron Rodgers wants to play, tell me how you build the roster better around him when there's $40 million of dead cap space for Aaron Rodgers not to be there. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I want to keep Aaron Rodgers. I want to run this thing back. I want to have a palate cleanser of a year or two and get away from these stories about the owner and get away from the team being the worst run franchise in the sport, get away from the longest playoff drought in history, like just, or I shouldn't say in history, current, you know, currently 14 years, like end all of that. And for me, as I look through the names, Vrabel is number one for me. I believe in Vrabel. I've thought he's a good head coach and a great head coach with Tennessee. I think he is that kind of stabilizing force, and he could be your guy moving forward. Like, I think Vrabel probably would be my number one. But with the clear destination of New England there for him, and now with Antonio Pierce out as the Raiders head coach, and the reports that Tom Brady is going to have such a role in part in hiring this head coach, his connection to Tom Brady, having played with him, his connection to New England, obviously having played there, it just feels like he's not going to be a Jet. So when I look at the other names and I look at, you know, you mentioned, you know, one of the names, Alan, from the Detroit defensive coordinator, or Brian Flores, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, who's got head coaching experience with Miami. Like, none of them jump out at me. None of them excite me. Certainly not Rex Ryan. Like, it doesn't excite me. Ron Rivera doesn't excite me. You know, some of these other candidates that they either have talked to or are going to talk to don't excite me. And now that the Bears are going to talk to Pete Carroll, I wasn't sure. You know, I knew Carroll kind of wanted to coach. I wasn't sure how he was viewed in the NFL. But if the Bears are going to interview him, I think Pete Carroll, as far as any of the other names out there, I know he's 73, but he's about as spry a 73-year-old as I've ever seen. And I'm not looking. I don't necessarily need to find my next head coach of the future. I want someone. You come in, Pete Carroll comes in here, and he's got national championships. He's got a Super Bowl title. From 2010 to 2023, the Seattle Seahawks, under Pete Carroll's leadership, were a consistent contender year in and year out. Whether it was the Legion of Boom and that defense doing it early, whether it was Russell Wilson turning into a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback later on, like whatever that's the other thing. You know, Russell Wilson was a different kind of guy, and there were issues sometimes, and maybe it wasn't always handled perfect, but he's got some experience with handling a quarterback with an ego. Like, I just think Pete Carroll is associated with winning. You bring in Pete Carroll here with Aaron Rodgers, and you find a way to make it work, stabilize this team, good coaching, winning coaching. You know, he's been around the block. He's won big games. He's won a Super Bowl. He's got to be respected, you know, around. He's respected around the league. He'll be respected by the players. Certainly Aaron Rodgers, who's played against him, respects him. I think that's as good a name as I've heard. And when I saw him connected to the Bears, I was like, "That I think that makes more sense for the Jets than any other name I've heard, especially under the way I'm thinking about it, as in bringing back Aaron Rodgers and just trying to get away from what they are right now. I don't need the young, hot executive who's going to turn, or coordinator rather, who's going to, you know, transform the team over the next couple of years. I want to win next year." I look at the Jets differently than maybe I look at some other teams where, like, I'm not interested in the rebuild. I don't want to lose for another 2-3 years to turn it all around and get, like, I really feel like they need a palate cleanser. All these stories about the owner, all the losing they've done, the lack of playoffs over the 14 years, the decision to bring in Aaron Rodgers, the difficulties of letting him go in the salary cap, like, everything about it screams, like, run it back with him, Garrett Wilson, Devontae Adams, Breece Hall. Like, I still believe those players are extremely talented and good enough to win if they actually got some coaching in here. And I think the defense, who dealt with some injuries, hopefully would be healthier. Hopefully Sauce Gardner can, you know, have a better season than he had this year and revert back to the player he was previously. You get a good, you know, defensive, you get new coordinators in here, and you coach this team up, and with this roster, you can go out and win 10 games. That's what I'm looking to do. And for me, you know, I heard the afternoon show kind of talking about maybe Mike McCarthy being a stabilizing force, but it sounds like he's going to go back to Dallas as the Bears asked for permission to talk to him and Dallas denied it. But like that kind of coach. And to me, if you're going to get a stabilizing force here for the next couple years to just help figure out where this franchise is going and get you a palate cleanser, you know, who better than a Super Bowl champion? And someone who, like, had sustained success in the NFL year after year after year for 13 years. Let's go to Nick in Queens. What's up, Nick?
Hey, what's going on? You know, I think when you look at the job Rex Ryan did, I think it's the most underrated job a coach has ever done. When you think about, he went on the road and beat a Charger team that had won 11 straight, okay? That's mm-hmm. just one element. He beat Tom Brady in New England. He beat Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. To do all those things with one of the worst statistical quarterbacks in NFL history, Mark Sanchez, with a team that no one before the season had anywhere going anywhere.
Yeah.
To me, when you look at back-to-back seasons, he was a couple of plays away of going to the Super Bowl mm-hmm. with Mark Sanchez in New York. So it's not like he took over a team that's had a lot of success, like the 49ers, and he just, you know, continued it. He did it with one of the most dysfunctional franchises. So to me, a guy like that, like you said, it's a win-now team. I don't think it harms your team in any way going forward if you bring him in for 2 years, because obviously
I agree with you that I would view Rex as the same type of thing I'm talking about with Pete Carroll. I would view Rex as the guy, come in, short term, high energy, see if he can get this particular group with Aaron Rodgers. I would only do it with Aaron Rodgers. I'm not giving Rex. I know he had success with Mark Sanchez, the young quarterback, but still, I would view it as, let's get this particular roster motivated to try and win now. I'm not going to rebuild necessarily with Rex Ryan, but I don't disagree with you necessarily about the job he did here, but like, and I know this isn't necessarily the be-all, end-all, but it didn't end well. He went to Buffalo and failed, and he hasn't gotten a sniff. You're not alone in having eyes and seeing what he did. You're not alone in knowing he won road playoff games against some of the greatest quarterbacks who ever lived with Mark Sanchez. And yet, why has no one come and knock on that door to see if he wants to be there, if he wants to interview for head coaching position over the last decade? Why is he on ESPN?
You know what? But I think in this particular situation, when you're dealing with a team that's had zero success, and you know Aaron Rodgers is almost not likely, no matter what happens next season, to win the Super Bowl. When you look at the Ravens and the Bills and teams that are trying to get their first Super Bowl, there's no way he's going to do all of a sudden now next year. So if you have a guy that you know has significantly overachieved, why not just take a chance on that? Because
he overachieved for a year. I mean, I can give you other coaches who've overachieved.
I don't know to that degree, though, over two seasons. It wasn't like it was a one-time thing. When he did it the next time again, that to me tells me, okay, that there was something really real, whether it was his personality, whether there's just something real about him. And I think when you're dealing with a team that has the talent to potentially get to a Super Bowl, if you look at, you know, from a talent standpoint, why not bring in a guy that's done it with a much worse quarterback and with a much less talented roster? Because like you said, it's a 1 or 2 year deal. So worst case scenario, it doesn't work out. You can move on. You're not damaging anything going forward.
No, I mean, I understand that, but why him because of 2 years of success 15 years ago?
Because no one else
has been out of the game. So I mean, they've hired some bad coaches. Granted, it's not that nobody else has ever, over the last 15 years, nobody else has overachieved. Or nobody else has taken a lesser quarterback.
I don't think you're bringing anyone that's a sure thing that you're going to bring in. And Vrabel's an excellent coach. But I think the fact that he's done it before, and we know that we've seen him hire coaches that don't work out. The next guy they bring in, there's no guarantee they'll work.
I understand that. So should the Giants call back Tom Coughlin?
Well, if he
I mean, I'm sure he still does. I mean, we've seen it before. Gibbs came back with Washington. Like, should you just go back if you're a floundering team? Should you just go back and hire the last coach that won with you?
I mean, if there is a guy that's out there right now that you knew would 100% change this team, obviously you do it. I just think that when you look at what's out there, and Vrabel, obviously, okay, I wouldn't be upset with that. But aside from him, I'm not just hiring a first-time coordinator because we've seen those things fail many times.
Yeah.
And I just think when you have a guy like Rex Ryan,
he hasn't been in the NFL in 12 years, 11 years.
I think he's learned a lot. I think he's learned a lot over the years. And
looking at ESPN?
I'm just growing your knowledge from talking to other analysts consistently.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're clutching at straws to hire a guy that you remember fondly. I think you are trying to find a way to make a case for a guy who gave you the best moments you've had in the last 12, 15, 20 years. I think that's all it is. I think you just want to harken back to when times were easier and things were cheaper and, you know, eggs only cost $2 and, a gallon of milk was $1.50 and, you know, gas was $1.89 and things were simpler and I want to go back to those days when the Jets were in the AFC Championship game, man. Let's go. Why not bring Mark Sanchez? You know what? I mean, he's probably could still throw. He's a young man. He's learned a lot in the broadcast booth. You could probably bring him back. Bart Scott. He's still an incredible athlete. I know I'm having fun now and being silly, but you can't recreate those teams. You can't do it. It's the same people who want to give me all the same crap about the Yankees that Jorge Posada should be the bench coach and Scott Brosius should be the infield coach and Andy Pettit should be the pitching coach or David Cohn should be the pitching coach. Like, it's just, you can't recreate the 90s. You can't recreate 2010 by hiring Rex Ryan. It's a different time, a different team. Like, it's just, and, you know, he hasn't been a coach in the league for a long time. And for him to stand there and tell you, I'm the best candidate by far. When, you know, there are candidates like, you know, Brian Flores has been head coach in the league. He's a current defensive coordinator on a 14-win team. Rex Ryan is arguing with Teddy Bruschi. Like, I mean, it's not the same. It's been a long time. And just because many, many years ago he won some games we didn't expect him to win doesn't make him the best candidate for this job right now. And having said all that, do I think it's the worst thing the Jets could do? Do I think it's an absolute embarrassment? No, you're right. You give him a 2-year contract, you see if he can motivate this group in particular. But I don't know how they'll view it. Like, I don't know how these current players are going to think of the idea that he was hired just because he once wore the same colors with the same organization and won some games. Like to me, Pete Carroll, even at his age, he's going to come in here with a bounce in his step. I mean, remember, he took his shirt off with DK Metcalf just a couple of years ago. I mean, he's a couple of years removed. He won a Super Bowl. He was coaching in the league a couple of years ago. Most of those guys played against him. Like, I don't know if Rex Ryan is the same thing. I mean, he's famous for let's go get some damn snacks. It's not the worst thing they could do, but I certainly think there are better options. And I don't love going back. And I know Pete Carroll, if you like going back, go back to Pete Carroll. It went well. Remember how Pete Carroll was the head coach of the Jets? It went really well.
He was great.
It was great. Horace in Virginia Beach. What's up, Horace?
How you doing, Chris? How you
good
doing?
Good, how are you, buddy? I'm doing great.
Right, I just got a quick question. Mr. Maradona, this week in his press conference, when they were interviewing him, he said that he's tired of our defense. We can't stop nobody. Seeing them running up and backing up and down the field, whatever. But I'm saying, would Antonio Pierce help us? Because Bowen's record's horrible.
Yeah, I talked about this before. I am not against letting go of Bowen and moving on from him and getting another defensive coordinator in here. He was a linebacker. He was a middle linebacker.
He got a Super Bowl ring with us. I mean, it at least helped the fan base because everybody's on.
Why do
like
we want to do this? Why do Jet fans want Rex Ryan? Why would Giant fans want Antonio Pierce? Antonio Pierce has never been a coordinator in this league. I know he was a head coach. He went from linebacker coach to head coach. He has never been a coordinator. He's never called a defense. Is he capable of it? I mean, he was a linebacker, NFL player. You know, I think he was probably the green dot wearer and the play caller, if I remember correctly, for that Giant team. Smart guy. I don't think he's incapable of doing it. But the Giants are going into a season to save their lives. Like, and then if you're Antonio Pierce, like, think about, if you're Antonio Pierce, do you want to go to the New York Giants and join a staff that literally the owner just showed no faith in off of another couple of, off of two miserable seasons, and go in there to run a defense against a coach who ran the last two defensive coordinators out of the building, literally Wink Martindale screaming and cursing him out, going to college. And now he's, Shane Bowen just got fired. And you want to go in there with no experience of being a defensive coordinator at the NFL level and take over that prospect? You could go back-to-back years getting fired as a head coach and then getting fired as a defensive coordinator.
That kind of makes sense. Well, look, man, you have a great evening tonight.
You got it. And I just, guys, why do we want to go back and do all this, man? He was the linebacker for the New York Giants. That doesn't make him a candidate to be the defensive coordinator. And despite the fact that he was a head coach, he's never been a coordinator. He was an assistant head coach and a defensive coordinator for Arizona State. But at the NFL level, he was a linebacker's coach for a year and a half before they made him the interim head coach last year. I'm not saying he can't do the job, but if you're looking, you know, to fix the coordinator position, wouldn't you rather have someone who's had experience being a coordinator? Like, I don't know. I don't know if he wants to do that job. It's a tough sell to be talking about. It's a tough sell to be coordinators for these two guys. That's the one thing, because I don't know. Kafka's getting interviews. Kafka got his job taken, his play calling duties taken away from him. I don't know if he's going to stay as offensive coordinator. That one doesn't bother me as much, because obviously it's Dable's offense, no matter who the coordinator is. But if you fire Bowen, right, you've got Wink Martindale, who left the year before because he couldn't get along with the coach. Now, it takes two to tango, but right now it's easy to lay the blame at Dable's feet, because Wink Martindale went to college, to be fair, but went to Michigan, performed well, and the season went the way it went, and Bowen and this defense were terrible. So Wink Martindale is winning the argument at the moment, but it takes two to tango. But you got a head coach who couldn't figure it out with a defensive coordinator who was working for the franchise. Now they're on the hot seat. The owner said as much. It's a coaching regime that's won, you know, 9 games over the last 2 seasons. They're on the hot seat. You don't know if they're going to have a quarterback, and you're going to come in and take over as the defensive coordinator on that ship, where it is very likely the head coach and the GM could be fired next year, and suddenly, you know, you're a one-time loser with the New York Giants. Like, that is a tough sell to bring in another coordinator here. Now, look, there's only so many jobs. I'm sure someone will take it. But you want to get a prominent defensive coordinator in here? It's going to be tough. It's a tough sell. Maybe that's why an Antonio Pierce would work. Maybe he would take that job. But for me, after being a head coach in the NFL, the last thing I want to do is go have run into a very easy to fail situation and get fired back to back years. Now I'm a head coach who couldn't cut it, and I'm a defensive coordinator who got fired. So I think there's a chance they fire Bowen, but that is a tough job to fill, because they're in a precarious situation, which is why I hated the way John Mara handled the situation yesterday, or 2 days ago now. I hated that press conference. Hated it. Not only did he show no conviction in the too many's hiring, he showed no conviction in his decision-making. Like, you have got to project confidence. He was so hung up. And this is what I said yesterday in my open. He was so hung up on making sure the fan base knew that he's frustrated and he's unhappy, that he put that over the idea of trying to assure the fan base that he believes this is the best path and best course of action. Like, he projected no confidence in the decision he made. You knew the fan base.
He started the press conference saying it was going to be an unpopular decision. He knew that. And instead of trying to convince people it's the right one, he spent all his time saying, I understand why you think it's not. Like, it just, I hated the tone. I hated everything. Even if you don't believe it, again, even if you don't believe it, even if you're not sure, you got to show me you're sure. I used the quote yesterday that it's better, I'd rather be wrong than ignorant. I'd rather be wrong than confused. I'd rather come out today, as certainly as the owner, where I'm not going anywhere. I don't have anybody to hold me accountable. I'm the owner of the team. Go out there and give us some false bravado. It's not going to kill you. Go out there and show us you're confident, even if you're not, which, you know, if you're not, then don't do it. But go out there and tell us you're confident in this. And then when you're asked about whether or not they're on a short lease next year, be like, no, I'm not going to talk about that. Look, I believe they're the people for it, and I'm not worried about that because next year is going to be a better season. Oh, but what if they lose a lot of games? Listen, I don't expect them to lose a lot of games. I'm not worried about a hot seat right now. For me, these are the guys moving forward. Oh, I better feel better next than I do right now. And, you know, they, like, it's just, I hated everything about that press conference. And so now, again, it has ramifications. Good luck selling a defensive coordinator. What kind of real good quality defensive coordinator is going to join a sinking ship? The owner just kept them he's given them one more shot at having a winning season, and the roster's kind of and they don't have a quarterback. But sure, I'll go play defense with all their inexperienced cornerbacks. I'll go coach them up. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Continue to take your phone calls. We've got one more hour in our 5-hour midnight ride. We take you all the way till 5 a.m. in the warm-up show. We'll be right back.